Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Well, you call it an intruder. I just call it a surprise visitor. Anyway, welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, or you can call me Jennifer Perry or J-Mod, as the modettes do. But I want to thank everybody who's been following and listening. I'm telling you, we've had a big spike in listeners. I've had a lot more subscribers on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog, a lot more followers. My numbers were so up, I thought that somebody had, you know, were playing with my computer. But I just want to thank everybody for listening, because all of you people that listen and tell your friends to listen and subscribe help me to continue to get good sponsors and great guests. And we've had so many fun people. This has just been a run of great people for months and months now, and I'm just so grateful to that too. Let's see, what's going on with who's been here lately? Well, let's see. Don't forget, you can still get Rudy Sarzo, his book Off the Rails, about traveling with Ozzy Osbourne, and the year he was touring with Ozzy as a bass player, he left Quiet Riot for a while to tour with Ozzy, and that's when his friend Randy Rhoads died in the small plane during the tour. So that's a great book. And also, Rudy's out playing bass with the Guess Who right now, he just told me. But he also thanks me for still talking about his book to you, and I told him it matters. Also, let's see. Oh, David Fischoff. I got to tell you this. David Fischoff was on about a week or two ago, last week actually. David Fischoff, he is the guy, he's an agent and producer of sports and entertainment, but he's also the guy. He created he's the one that got Ringo Starr touring with the All-Star Band. It was his idea, but also he created the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And then September is the Judas Priest edition. So the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp is just rockandrollcamp.com. Go to it. And David said, anyone who signs up, anyone who registers for Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp in September, if you say that you heard about it on Madame Perry Salon, he will give you a guitar worth $700. So, he didn't say what kind. He just said worth $700. So, let's see. And coming up soon, we're going to have Prairie Prince, the drummer extraordinaire Prairie Prince. You know him from the Tubes and from Todd Rundgren. But tonight, you know, recently we had this Australian guy on, Anthony Sharp. He's done a lot of TV and movies, and he's most known in the States for Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. He plays Cease, and he told me, if you were listening, you know, he told me about the funniest woman he knows that is so talented, and said we should have her on. And she's here tonight, all the way from Australia. She's coming into Madame Perry's Salon. I've got some nice fluffy cushions for her. So if she parts the beaded curtains and comes on in, please welcome to Madame Perry's Salon, Julie Sharp. Welcome, Julie. Come on
Hello.
In. Get comfy.
Thank you.
Hello.
I'm going to plug myself on this nice Persian rug here. And zen out a little
bit. Oh, good. Yeah. Get comfy. Spread out. Yeah. There's some snacks around. We had a few mystery writers on recently that brought a lot of snacks and then left them. I think it's Rick Cornell and Brett Wright. And what they leave, you know, is someone else's treasure.
You've had some amazing people on this show.
Oh, I've been very, very lucky. I've been very blessed, as I have had a lot of fun people. And, you know, funny thing, I don't know, are you a fan of Todd Rundgren?
Now, where would I know Todd Rundgren from? Where would I know Todd from?
Hello, it's me. Oh, girl.
Oh.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Oh,
maybe not
from Down Under.
Oh, well, excuse him. Well, excuse him. Why? Well, he. I went to see his latest show back in at the end of May, I believe, and his bass player, Kazem Sultan, had been on, and Kazem plays bass for Todd. He was musical director for Meatloaf. He's played for Celine Dion, Joan Jett. You know, he's on tour with Don Felder right now from the Eagles.
Oh, wow.
But
yeah.
He had us, for me and my husband, a little invitation to come backstage after the show to talk to the band. So he's going around to the head, Greg Hawkes, who was with the Cars. Remember the Cars in the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been playing with Todd for years. And Prairie Prince, as I was saying, all these people were back there. And he says, you ought to get him on. You ought to get him on. Because Kazem was on, and he's going to come back soon when he gets off tour. And I said, well, all these guys are so tired. He goes, I don't want to interrupt them. And he goes, wait a minute. He goes, each one, hey, you ought to be on her podcast. It's a lot of fun. You know, everybody's like, well, okay. What do you want, my email address? And then he goes to the next guy, you know, to Greg Hawkes. Hey, you really ought to be on her podcast. It's a lot of fun. I'm going, you know, you can't do better than that than to have the guests back there. They're booking the show for me. So, yeah, so, see, it's, and I hope you'll do the same thing. So, to get going with you, you know what? First of all, I'm trying to describe you. You're a professional comedian, professional MC for corporate events. You do these things. Anthony kept talking about around the room. I kept thinking around the room, but it's like work in the room. You really do go around the room and work the room at a club. And you have all these fascinating characters that you've created. So I started going and looking through your website and through the different characters, and I am falling in love with them. I don't know where. Let's start with when you and Anthony met when you were both doing comedy, right? Both of you?
That's right. Yep, yep. So we were working at a place called Dracula's Comedy Cabaret in Melbourne, Australia. And so I had a 20-year career there. It was my absolute dream job because it not only incorporated a horror theme, but it was also very silly and all about comedy and stuff. So it was really, really good fun. And, you know, this whole night out was an experience. You know, you ride a ghost train into the theater and all the waiters are dressed up and can be quite abrupt and abusive and all this sort of stuff. So it was a really kooky, kooky place. And the show itself was that you had these characters that you would meet and greet people as, and then as the show continued to turn into a cabaret show, so you would therefore be other characters and singers and dancers and circus acts and magic tricks. And like, so we just puppets, you know, we covered the board with everything. But yes, one of the most popular characters was a character called Sarah Pax, and that was my comedy routine, was that I would do a slight little stand-up and then I would go out into the room and just talk with people and improvise and see what would come out of that night, that situation. And so it was always such good fun. And you know, people love it because they had that, oh, no, she's coming near me. But it was never to be cruel or be mean or anything like that. It was just because I was the... You know, my character's the self-deprecating, silly one. So if anything bad was to be said, it was on me, you know, because I was so stupid, basically. So everyone just embraced it, you know, and it's such a fun, good character and stuff. So that being said, Anthony, of course, was hired as the young, gorgeous, sex appeal singer, you know, he looked like Fabio with his long, flowing hair, and he was so all the girls went crazy for Anthony, and we just started off being really good friends, and then romance blossomed, of course.
L'amour.
And so we've been together for 17 years now. That one fateful,
and you,
yeah, that job together, and now it's 17 years down the track.
And a lovely daughter.
And a lovely daughter came out of it, yes. So she's 8 now, and she's just as kooky as the rest of them, you know. So she's really good fun.
I picture a lot of laughter in your house.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And we don't want to push her into anything. We want her to be her own person and to find her own way. So, but she's, again, I think being in a house of the arts, she's destined to go that way. So she sits quietly and writes lots of stories, and she has this amazing knack of making costumes out of anything, out of her own wardrobe, so she has this amazing ability, like she'll see a character that she loves and she'll make that costume with the stuff that's just around the house. It's amazing. It's
brilliant. It's fantastic.
Yes.
And you know, I like people who can find their own, can make their own amusement and entertainment. And it sounds like she can, she's that creative. She won't just sit around and say, "Mom,
definitely.
I'm bored. Find something for me." All right. So you're doing the stand-up. Sarah Pax, because I posted videos of Sarah Pax on Twitter, and I think, Twitter. I might have put one on LinkedIn. I definitely put some on Facebook. But so Sarah Pax is described as, because you got other characters I want to talk about, but Sarah Pax, she's the lovable drug sponge. She's like the love child of Ozzy Osbourne and Amy Winehouse.
Yep.
And
yep.
You're right. She's self-deprecating, but when she gets out to work the room, some people kind of like, oh, no, but they're doing it sort of like but they really do want her to come. Because every time she comes around, or Sarah comes around to people, it's like the entire table. And let me tell you, from watching the videos, this is what I saw, Julie. It looked like people, you could just feel from watching them, their expectations and the excitement rises because they have no idea what Sarah's going to say, what she's going to do to anybody, but they're up for it. You know, they're up for the surprise, and they're up
definitely.
For it, and they know it's going to be funny.
Yep. And apparently they still ask about me. When people go to Dracula's now, they still say, "What is that Sarah Pax girl?" Because it's been 8 years now, 9 years since I've been out of Dracula's now. So, yeah. So,
So
she's left a legacy, which is great.
No kidding. Yeah, so, and you have definitely a distinctive look as Sarah, because you've got the dreadlocks and the outfit. So does being in a disguise like that just kind of help you flow better with the spontaneity? Because some of it seems rather off the cuff. And I'm sure you've got some things that you plan, but things that are off the cuff and sort of go improv.
Well, the great thing about that was because we were doing it 5 nights a week, that show, so it allowed me that freedom to play as much as I did have some standard ones, like just to keep a flow going and knowing that you're going to get some laughs throughout the room. But a lot of it was just off the cuff because you had that freedom to be able to experiment and to play. And the funny thing is being in that costume, because I don't know if you know, but Sarah Pax is a drug that we used to have here in Australia, which was very similar to Prozac. And
no, I didn't know.
So it was like the housewives drug, they called it. Sarah Pax was the housewives drug. So that's where that name came from. And so that was the whole thing of she's meant to be this, you know, whacked out, druggy kind of character. But she was very childlike and innocent as well. And so that's why she could get away with a lot of things. But the costume, Anthony used to laugh at me because if I'd call him during the night, he'd go, "You're in costume, aren't you?" Because I couldn't drop the voice that I would do, because I'd have the wig on and everything. So it just sort of, you know, all stayed together. But But yeah, but she was like an alter ego. It's that thing of if you could be any person that you wanted to be and say anything that you wanted to say, the no filter, it was just freedom, you know. And again, I think that's what the childlike thing was that things just came out and, you know, so it just worked. It just worked a treat. But yeah, definitely an alter ego because I would not say those things, you know, as me.
Or go lick someone's head or talk about the crop circles on the back of their little spot.
Exactly.
Just to say,
I mean,
too, if you're listening
that?
Live, just nobody but Sarah or, you know, something. Yeah, Sarah. If you're listening live and you want to talk to Julie Sharp, you can call at 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. It's a toll-free number in the continental U.S. and the rest of the world. It's +1, and it'll cost, but it'll be worth it. So please feel free to call in and talk to us or message in a question. So yeah, see, that's the thing. You created the character, so she can say what she wants. Now, I understand about when you put on the outfit, because back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, I worked as a professional impersonator of Marilyn Monroe and Madonna. And so I understand, because it took me a while. I mean, I didn't look that way every day. When you go do look-alike work at events, like, you know, corporate events and parties and stuff, you know, you usually see a lot of other people doing the same thing. It's like the Jack Nicholson guy that I would see, and he looked just like him. I said, you know, he said, you have to work to do this. I said, yeah, I don't look like Marilyn Monroe, but I know how to, you know, do the makeup, the shading and everything. And so, and it takes me about an hour for all that, the makeup, and I'll put on the wig and everything and the dress. But, and get the voice, because she talks much more like this. And so he goes, yeah, he says, but look at me. That's my corgi. He says, but look at me. He says, I wake up like Jack Nicholson. What can I do? You know? He says, I got no choice but to go out like this every day. But, yeah, you have to put on. But then you also have to, yeah. Of course, there were also a lot of Elvis impersonators. And I can tell you, all Elvi were not created equal. But.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
Yeah.
But it's funny because we just had the Legends crew out here in Australia. All the impersonators from Vegas.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is
so
it
we
fun?
Met some. Oh, they were incredible. Absolutely incredible. We met the Elvis, and he ended up being the same Elvis that I met in Vegas 25 years ago.
Oh, really?
And he's still going. Yeah. So it was really, it was really fun. And his name was Kevin, and I just thought that was so funny that this wonderful Elvis impersonator and his name was Kevin. Great. 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 But yeah, they had a Madonna. They had a Madonna girl. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were all fantastic.
I did Dolly Parton once. Oh, it's an interesting job. I did Dolly Parton once, but Julie, you know, that was hard on the back. It really was.
Yeah.
<You know>.
Yes, yes, it would have been very hard on them. Fantastic.
So I had to let, that go. But
yes.
So now do you still do comedy? You still get out to the clubs and at all?
Well, what I do now is I have another. So the last 6 years since I left Dracula's. I have started a job at the Crown Casino in Melbourne, which is it's a massive venue. It's the only casino that we have here in Victoria, of course. And so we do a show, which is it's a male review show, but it's different to all the other. So it's not your Magic Mike. It's not that sort of thing. It's an actual cabaret show. So the boys are actual professional dancers, and so we have comedy and a theme of it as well. It's you know, Princes of the Night, so there's a slight medieval theme at the start, but then we sort of go into more contemporary pieces and stuff. But yeah, so that keeps me in the loop, so I still get to be, again, it's another persona, it's me amplified, but again, I still get to do my improvised comedy. I get to talk to people in the room, but I also just, you know, basically drive the show through and stuff, but get to play with the girls who are, you know, have come along to see these men get down to their knickers.
Now, does your husband ever come watch you at this show, or has he ever seen you there?
He has come. He's come and seen it once, because we did a big show. They've got a massive showroom called the Palms, which is where they put all their Vegas style shows. So we did that a couple of years ago. So Anthony was able to come to that one, but he can't usually come to the other Saturday night ones because he does he gigs. He's playing his music just across the hallway in the next nightclub. So,
okay.
So we're at work together, but we don't see each other.
Okay. And now, but you also do, looks like you're certainly in demand for MC and entertainment at corporate events.
So that's the same sort of thing. So it's corporate work can be, as you can imagine, can be quite dull. So I always let them know that that they'll get their money's worth out of me if I can be a comedy character instead of a straight, just me getting up there going, oh, next award we have such and such coming in. So so they definitely get more value out of me being a comedy character to host an MC event. It makes it more personal, fun, and loosens everyone up a bit. Because you can imagine all these corporate gigs, everyone, well, first of all, they don't want to be there because they think it's going to be dull and boring, don't they?
You're right.
So, it's so right.
Yes.
I don't know who set the scene for these corporate gigs many, many years ago, but whoever it was not in the mood for a good time at all. So, so that's actually, I've just joined with another guy who's a circus booking agent, and he's, you know, been in the circus and all his performance career. And we're just saying that, you know, now it would be great to start introducing those fun things back into corporate events instead of them being so straight-laced and, you know, unoffensive.
Yeah, I know. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I've had a jazz combo for years, and we've played a lot of corporate gigs. And yeah, I know if it wasn't for the alcohol, and their bosses telling them to go, if they have to keep the alcohol to keep people there. But you know, I know what that's like. just like
absolutely.
Playing, like when we play a wedding reception. There's the bride is glad that it's done. The groom is glad that it's done. And everybody else is just happy to have free food and drink. So,
yes.
It's a decent gig.
Yes. So I think we need to make it more of an experience for people. I think that's the thing now is immerse them in a fun world, because people are. They're a bit too serious and a little bit too politically correct and stuff at the moment. And I think we need to shake that up and let people, remind people that they can have a laugh, I think is the main thing.
Well, Julie, I'm sure everybody knows what's going on with American politics and our president, and if anybody needs to laugh, we do, so.
Yes, exactly. You have to.
Yeah. So now another thing that your hubby was telling me was talking about a TV pilot that you two created. He says, you know, you're a passionate wildlife advocate, and I've shared that on a lot of the things that I've posted about you being on here, because so many of the musicians I've had on are also like to use that their celebrity as and their platform to help causes with dog cat rescue or just animal rights activism. So have you really gone into jungles?
I have. So that was in 2001. I went to Borneo to a place called Camp Leakey. So we all know Lewis Leakey, who is the man who got Dian Fossey on board with the gorillas.
Oh, yes.
And Jane Goodall on board with the chimpanzees, and they got Baruche Gaudicus on board with the orangutans in Borneo. So this was a volunteer program that we went across there and met up with some other volunteers from all around the world. And, yeah, we basically immersed ourselves for 3 months in the jungle living with the orangutans and building things. So, like, we helped build a proboscis monkey research centre, you know. So we were building piers that would go out to the river for the boats to pull up in. And this is, you know, this is primitive stuff because there's no electricity out there. So we had to, you know, chisel holes into pieces of hardwood to, you know, fit them all together with, you know, the pegs instead of nails.
Oh, because you don't have power tools.
Don't have power tools.
Right.
That was all hand. So we went kind of a little bit loopy. No power. So, yeah, so we started going a little bit cuckoo over, you know, doing this sort of stuff. But it was, at the same time, it was just this most magical place. It was, you know, we were off this river and there's, you know, there's crocs in the river. So you had to bathe in the river, of course. So you'd have to jump out as quick as you can before a croc got you. And I think it was a couple of years after we were there, an English volunteer actually got taken by a croc there. So it was crazy. But if you could imagine, do you have the butterfly houses in your zoos in the States?
Yes.
It's like living in a butterfly house. It's the best way to describe it. So that's the kind of temperature you got, you know, that humidity in the air. And there's just these massive butterflies will just go past you all the time. You can hear the gibbons in the background. You'll hear the rustle of the big alpha male, you know, because you don't know where he is and he just wants to pinch all your food. So he's always trying to break into the little house that we're staying in. So you always had to look out for him because he'd ambush you. This was this massive, massive ape. And you just had to be on the lookout for Kusasi, the king of Camp Leakey. I remember I had to go away from the group for a minute because I had to go to the toilet, and the toilet's, of course, very primitive as well. So you've got to just go basically to a hole in the ground and put the toilet paper in a bucket and stuff. And so I was in the toilet and Kusasi has come over because he knows that there's food in this hut. And he just gets his fingernail and pulls the weatherboard off, the plank of wood, just with his fingernail, just goes plink. And so he'd get into the toilet area. So I've had to jump off the toilet hole and into a tiled area. I don't even know what this tiled area was for, maybe for this exact reason of just getting out of the way. So I had to jump into this tiled area and hide from him because he's the alpha male. You just don't know what he's going to do. He could just, you know, grab you and, you know, crush your arm or something like that. And he came into the toilet and grabbed the bucket full of toilet paper and went outside and he just pulled this thing apart. So all our dirty toilet paper has just been strung all the way around the camp because he's decided to pull it. Crazy.
It's kind of like, I don't know if kids do this in Australia, but I know it used to be more popular many years ago. Teenagers would go and take toilet paper and roll it all in the trees over people's houses during the night. And it's going to roll in their yards. It was like that.
It was kind of like that. So he must have learned it from one of the Americans.
No doubt. You can count on the Americans for something like that. You know, we're always going to bring something like that to the whatever we do. So how long were you in Borneo?
So that was 3 months. We were there for 3 months. And it was just, again, it was really hard going. It was really hard going because you're very much isolated and stuff. And And now, again, it's that thing in hindsight when you go, oh, my God, no, it was such an amazing experience. And and the main reason we were there is because, you know, there's the deforestation happening because they're putting all the palm oil plants in and stuff like that. And so that was 2001 I went there. And then in 2006 I took Anthony over there. And so all the lush jungle that I experienced wasn't there when within that 5 years that we went back. It was all gone. So you could really see the effect that it was having. And this is, you know, so these orangutans, they don't have anywhere to go. They're homeless, basically. So it's really sad. And again, it's just this corporate world that we've created. And you know, it was when I was there first, it was the illegal logging so that people could make money from that. And then that stopped, but the palm oil came in. So that was the next big thing. And of course, the gold mining they have there as well. So it's just these corporate things that go through and they just completely rape the earth is the only way I can say it. And when you see it, you just go, like, you know, we always hear about it. You always hear about it and you go, oh, my God, that's terrible. When you actually physically see it, it is devastating.
It is. And, of course, you know, we have things like that here, whether it's in the Midwest or even where I live in a suburb of Atlanta. We have a lot of deer near our yards. And I'm not way off in the country, but I'm not exactly in the city. But we have a lot of deer coming through and in our backyard and the woods behind the backyard. But they're always building more subdivisions and always raccoons and stuff coming in. And you always think, you know, where are they going to keep going? I mean, they keep building things, strip malls and drugstores. You know, like they get a drugstore on one corner, they got to have one on all four parts of that intersection. I'm a musician, and I think we've got too many drugstores, okay? So how many drugs do you need? All right, we have a call. We have a call here. Hi. And Julie? Just a minute.
Hello.
Okay. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. Is this California?
Hi, this is Andrea. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Can you hear me?
Andrea, this is Andrea calling. This is Andrea from California.
From California.
Julie Sharp.
Hi, Andrea.
Well,
nice
Julie,
to hear
hi.
You.
How are you doing? Thank you.
I'm good.
I really appreciate your courage doing stand-up and doing the MCs and getting out there in the public eye. But I'm actually just calling to say I've had some really bad experiences in public bathrooms before, but yours pretty much tops the list.
Yeah.
I have never heard of anything even close to that story, and I couldn't resist calling in to let you know. You get the Andrea Robinson Award for insane stories, okay?
Oh, fantastic. That's good to hear.
Yeah, you should feel honored. I think I have to open a whole new subcategory for you.
Yeah, I hope no one would experience something like that in California. That would be even more terrifying.
Oh, no. I mean, normally it's like when you're traveling, you know, you're in France or Italy or wherever you are. I mean, I've had some pretty amazing public stories, but that one pretty much takes the cake. And in fact, with such a shock, I literally could not resist calling in to say, congratulations, you just won the prize. You know, and I've hitchhiked through countries. I mean, we were roughing it, right? We had no actual place to live, so we had some pretty interesting experiences, but that pretty much blows the mind.
Yay!
So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
How wonderful. So you've traveled quite a bit.
So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, so jealous.
Yeah, just hitchhiking mostly, but I mean, I've been on several trips, and I've been pretty close to Australia. I've been to Fiji, so that was not too far away.
It's got to go like another 4 hours. Come another 4 hours over, and you'll be here.
Yeah, but that plane ride was pretty grueling, you know?
I know.
In fact, I was sleeping, and I woke up, and the stewardess had apparently come through, and my glasses fell off of my head because I was dead out. And they rolled the drink cart through and ran over the glasses. And they were these metal glass. Yeah, they were all twisted up. But, they kind of twist them back into shape. And I was so glad that I almost bought a brand new pair before I went to Fiji. And I was like, oh, my God, I am so glad I didn't buy, you know, an expensive pair of glasses, only to have it run over the next day, you know. Because I'm too cheap to buy the insurance. So, you know, that would have been it, right? I wouldn't have been able to see for another year.
But anyway, it worked out. We find that because when we've traveled, like Asia's not so bad. That's like your 6-hour plane ride. But we found like when we're going to America or Europe and stuff like that, we realize how far away Australia really is from everywhere. It's just my God, we really are isolated.
You guys really are out there on the island.
Well, that's what they had in mind when the English dumped you guys off down there. They figured they'll never get back, you know.
That's right. So, they can't make it back at all.
It's amazing.
It's so funny. And I love the fact that the way that Australia is advertised in America as well. You know, it's always, you know, if you don't like dangerous things, don't go there, because you know, we've got spiders and snakes and crocodiles and stuff. We don't see any of that stuff. But
But if you watch Crocodile Hunter, one of those shows, you just feel like, oh my God, they're constantly getting attacked by these huge dragon lizards and, you know, the Tasmanian devils. I mean, you guys have some pretty scary animals over there, no doubt, you know. But
I guess they don't hang around
in the city. They don't move into the condo next door.
I'm from the country. I'm actually from the country as well. I'm from country, New South Wales. Yeah.
And you've never been attacked by, like, a kangaroo or anything like that?
No. We used to see lots of kangaroos, and the guys that used to live across the road from us actually had a pet kangaroo that they nursed back to health after its mother had been killed. So they had a pet kangaroo. So he was lovely. But that was kind of our experience. And like I said, the most dangerous time I had was in Borneo, because we had to be careful of the crocodiles in the river when we were bathing, and we had to be careful of, you know, scorpions and the spiders that lived just in the hut that we're in, and God knows what else that hasn't even been discovered in the jungle yet. You know, we had to just deal with all that, and the mosquitoes. Oh my God.
Yeah, I've heard about those. And they're deadly.
And then you also went to Thailand, didn't you?
Yes, so we went to Thailand and we worked with the elephants. We went to the nature park, Elephant Nature Park, in just out of Chiang Mai, and that was a sanctuary for all the abused elephants. So, again, you don't even know that this sort of stuff goes on, but all these elephants are abused in the timber industry and, you know, doing tricks for tourists and trekking and all that sort of stuff. So some of these elephants were drug addicts, like the ones that worked in the timber mills and stuff. They would just shoot them full of amphetamine, so they would just constantly keep working, so they wouldn't rest. So they were just completely. So they had to come off the drugs and all this sort of stuff, and just absolute horror stories. You know, people blinding elephants, and you know, all this horrible stuff. But they had this beautiful sanctuary where they got to live out their old days and stuff. And it was so nice to just. again, we lived there, we stayed there, and we got to know the woman, Lek, who is the woman who runs the whole facility and cares for all the elephants and water buffalo and whatever else comes her way. I think there was 30 dogs and 20 cats and, all this sort of stuff. It was an absolute animal haven. And that's what we got to do. We'd feed the animals, and then we'd go down to the river with the elephants, and we'd wash them and play with them and do all that sort of stuff. And it's just amazing. I always try when we go on a holiday to have an animal experience, and this is what I'm teaching my daughter as well. So we did the elephants in Thailand. This is when we came up with the idea of the volunteer diaries, is to show people that when you travel, you can travel and see these amazing things, but you can also help out in the communities and the animals and children and things like that. And it gives you this absolute warm, fuzzy glow inside. Like, traveling's great and stuff, but when you actually help people and do something worthwhile, it's such a buzz. And, as we all know, like being performers, you get such a buzz out of being a performer, but this is an even more so bigger buzz from that, that you just, and I think it's just being human, and we've forgotten that because we've filled our humanness with consuming and all this sort of stuff, and we've forgotten how to give back. And by doing that, it's really lovely. And so that was where we came up with the idea of, if we had the volunteer diary, so you could go around to these places and just show people that these are the volunteer programs that you can do all around the world. How great is that? Have a holiday, but do something good as well.
Yeah, that's a terrific idea.
Oh, yeah, Andrea, yes, and I would sign up for that, wouldn't we, Andrea?
Oh, we would.
We would sign up for that.
Like, yes, we're so nature junkies, and we just love animals.
Yeah,
I mean, it would be dangerous.
Well, definitely. I've lived this long.
What the heck?
Nothing killed me yet, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. What a way to go, I live in America where, I could go into a Burger King and get shot. So if I'm going to if I'm going to buy the farm, I'd rather be doing something useful than just, shopping in a mall on the wrong day when a gunman comes
in.
Wouldn't you rather, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And, since the two-legged critters are more dangerous anyway, what the heck?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. We're the ones to look out for.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I should say the non-hairy two-legged ones.
Naked
apes, as it were. Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to
know. You
send your what?
Beg your pardon?
I don't know. Jennifer was saying something, and I think I interrupted her. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and try to.
Kangaroos two-legged.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are kangaroos considered two-legged? Yeah.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
I heard that you don't want to compete for the golf course or something.
Are they, bipod. That's what they call them, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Or is it tripod because it's got the tail? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
no, I think it's
tripod.
See, this Julie, is the kind of hard-hitting questions you get here in Madame Perry's salon.
I know.
See how much prep you had to do?
I'm all for the hard-hitting questions.
Andrea, have you seen the videos that I posted of Sarah Pax and Kitty Glamour of Julie's comic characters that she's created? Like, I posted a couple of videos, and the other one, Kitty Glamorous. Tell us about Kitty.
I like that.
Let's get back to the show business.
Kitty Glamorous came around because a talent guy had come into Dracula's, and he saw Sarah Pax, and he said, I want something along the lines of this character, but we can't do this character because of the drug reference. So we need something that will work the same. Someone who's quite stupid, I guess. So I just had this idea of here in Australia, you know, we have the morning shows, and the lady who used to host the morning show was a lady called Kerri-Anne Kennelly here in Australia, and she was just beautiful. She had the blonde hair and the big teethy smile, and her motto was that everyone should sparkle every day. So she always had the sequins on and stuff on you know, morning television. And so I thought she'd be a really funny character. She was lovely, but I thought a really funny character would be this TV host person whose teeth are a little bit too large for a face and the eyelashes are too long. So sort of that, who was that evangelist? Tammy Baker, was it?
Tammy Faye Baker.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So that sort of, that kind of thing, but an Australian version, and of course that she just always said the wrong thing because she was so dumb that just the wrong thing would come out all the time. So completely politically incorrect but innocent at the same time. Like, she's not doing it because she's being mean or anything like that. It was just because she had this childlike mind going on, basically. So that's where Kitty Glamorous came from. So, but again, you know,
okay.
that was a character that was fun, but she didn't sort of. She only did a couple of corporate gigs. She didn't hang around for too long.
I guess it's a short-lived career, you know, to be that perky blonde morning person. So, so just to give us a sample, give us a little sampling of Kitty Glamorous. Now, the video show, she's being followed by the camera. She's walking down, doing the person on the street random interviews, and she sees an American some American folks and says, "Oh, I can speak some American."
Oh yes!
And
oh my God!
She says,
"Ha ha! God damn, I'm gonna kick your ass." The G's with the homies, supping it up. I'm supping it up. Yes, because that's the
yes, she really does speak
that's
American.
That's the kind of view that we get of. That's the view we get of Americans over here.
That is my brother's second and third wife.
Oh my God.
That's a bit fried.
Just like that. They've said that to me before, so yeah, I gotcha. That was good.
Oh my gosh, that's terrific, yeah. I'm sure she had to go to school to learn that too. You know, you got to study Spanish, English, American.
I went to drama school for 3 years to learn that.
well
it paid off. Yep. You thought it wouldn't pay off, but it did. It did. It was worth all the money. That's what. Because I was telling Anthony, I said, "Don't do it, please." You know, I would. If you have to do something where you have a Southern accent, please let me coach you, because everyone comes up with a Southern accent, even Americans, and they sound like they're on a riverboat back in the 1800s or something. And
it gets back to Huckleberry Finn.
Every single, or like it's Gone with the Wind, and we don't. You know, I mean, I know I have a Southern accent, but I don't talk like Scarlett O'Hara. And I was starting to tell Anthony, but I didn't. I said, you know, the guy that killed John Lennon, David Chapman.
Yep.
Oh,
when
yeah.
Judah Friedlander played him in a movie, TV movie, and he's sitting there saying, "Imagine there's no heaven. That's easy for you, motherfucker, because you have everything." And I'm thinking, okay, I didn't know David Chapman, but my family did, because he was in the same Boy Scout groups as my brother. He grew up in our neighborhood.
Oh, my
okay.
goodness.
And I can assure you, because my My mother remembers the family, you know, because like I said, I didn't care because those Boy Scouts were just such creeps. I didn't want to be around them. But my mother, my whole family remembers. But I can tell you this. If David Chapman grew up in Gresham Park, which he did, and talked like that, he wouldn't have lived long enough to kill anybody. He would have been.
He would have been.
He wouldn't have lived that long if he had talked like that. There, he's probably a little more like me, and maybe more Southern. But yeah, so that's there you go. Well, now what other? Oh, and Kitty Glamorous is like she sees the Asian man, she sees the some woman, and she starts calling her Jenny from the Block and singing to her, and
because that's the thing. Kitty Glamorous will just constantly break out in song as well. That was the other thing. You know, she's that old school, you know, Liza Minnelli fan that anything that triggers a song, off she goes into, you know, there's no business like show business. Oh, I love it. All that sort of stuff.
All the old songs.
Yeah, constantly breaking out into the musicals and the old 70s hits.
I'm
kind of
like that myself.
Yeah, we can dig it. So those are the only two I could give to you, but I saw photographs of you in a dark wig, dark, curly, bushy wig, and in a corset. Now, I don't know if that was a character you did as a performance or if that was something you did for Anthony that wasn't supposed to be on the internet. I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much the latter. No. No, that was just that's how I started with Princes of the Night at the casino. So when I started there, because this was the first time that they've put a girl into a male review show. So as you know, they did it with Magic Mike, with Jada Pinkett Smith for that movie. But we were doing it 5 years beforehand. So I was the first female to be a host in a male review show, basically. So when I first started, it was like, okay, so how are we going to approach this? Do I have to be sexy like the boys? Do I have to, you know? So we had to try a few costume ideas, and that was one, was maybe if I started off like a burlesque kind of circus ringmaster, almost that kind of look. So, you know, the red and the black and the little hats and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from. So but as time sort of evolved over it, yeah, it's we've found that girls really respond to this MC woman being quite a strong character, and so quite vampish almost. So you know, I've got the leather pants now and the corset and a longer wig, and they sort of relate to that a little bit better. So I'm a little bit sexy, but I'm kind of like, but I'm in control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what they respond to, and the fact that, you know, I can have a laugh with them as well and have a laugh with the boys and stuff. So, so it embraces that equality that's all, you know, happening around the world now with Wonder Woman coming out and, you know, all the actresses coming up and saying, you know, we demand equal pay and all that. So it's a really poignant moment for this to be recognized now, I think, is that, you know, I'm a woman in a man's world and there's equality and there's this greatness. So it's very cool.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Do you ever feel like
you're
running out of ideas?
Woman.
That sounds like you have a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Do you? So does,
just
does
people
the
in my
elephants
head.
Kind of, yeah, does that, maybe it's just the way your mind works, but I just wonder if all the trips to the jungle are like, does that help your memory or your creative juices, or how do you stay on?
Yeah, it does because it actually gives you time to think. Like when you're in the jungle, you have no distractions. You're just someone said it the other day, which is great. You go from being a human doing to a human being.
Right.
You know, you just how cool is that? I love that saying. I'm going to
I love it. That one. But, you know, it must be just as good as meditation for clearing your mind, because you're constantly petrified that you're going to die, right? So that would totally clear the monkey chatter in your head, because all the monkey chatter in the real jungle, right?
And it is that thing of connecting. It's that connection with nature and not having the just that, you know, like, what, how do you explain it? Like, when you're in the city and around people a lot, you know, there's just that energy that's buzzing around you all the time. So you're always kind of heightened all the time. And when you have these experiences like being in a jungle and that sort of thing, it just, everything just slows down and you just sort of melt into stuff, and it's just beautiful and lovely. And so therefore your mind just relaxes and you don't have things just whirling around in there. And so, yeah, you do. Great reflection time, great time for creativity, and yeah. And just, and again, like, I see a lot of characters around, you know. So I did a show last year called Song Contest, which was a spoof on Eurovision.
Yeah.
And so
So
I have to be the Russian, you know, Belarusian hostess, you know. And so it was all very nice and good. And, you know, so, yeah, so I, you know, would base these characters on people that I knew. I used to go to this dance class when my daughter was doing ballet, and it was a dance stretch class, and there was this Russian ex-ballerina called Nina, and she was very hard, you know. Do it like this, you know. So you sort of pick up these characters just by people that you meet. It's very fun.
Awesome.
So sorry, that was a long-winded answer to that.
No, I love it.
It was
it's so true, you know. So true. We do have enough characters in this world. Yeah.
She could play the first lady.
Crazy people
like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, because where's the first lady from? What's her nationality?
She's from Slovenia. Slovenia.
Oh, Slovenian. Yes. Beautiful.
And the Slovenians are trying to
capitalize
on this.
Have they started taking her off on SNL yet?
You know what? I haven't
seen
that much. Yeah, a few times. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're kind of, they've done her a couple of times, but I think they're leaving her alone because it's sort of like she did not ask for this part of the spotlight. And so I think they must be leaving her alone because of that. So they did one or two, but that's it. But Scaramucci, you know, Stephen Colbert did a great Scaramucci, and now he's gone. So.
Oh.
Yeah, they had a field day with him.
Oh, funny.
Because he's got that Italian thing, and you know, he's like, this is how it is, you know? So,
He's a total mook. It's like a typical New York mook.
Yeah. Mooch. What kind of character or nationality or voice would you like to do next, Julie?
Oh, you know, it's always been such a funny thing, because that's always been the running gag with me and Anthony, is that I'm so bad at accents. And when I actually do an accent, for some reason, it always ends up being Indian. So I always end up talking like this, no matter what the accent is. And so it's always been a running gag. And so when, like I said, when I did this Belarusian hostess, I really had to concentrate hard on just practicing that every day. So I would just talk Russian everywhere I was going, like just at home. I'd have to do this accent, which drove everyone mad. But I don't know. I think because my mum is actually Scottish. And my nana had a very broad Scottish accent that I didn't even hear. I didn't even know she was Scottish when I was a kid. I had no idea. And it was only when people said, "Oh, your grandma's Scottish," I'd be like, "What? Yeah, is she? Yeah, she is. How do you know?"
Oh my God!
Had this accent, and so I just didn't hear it. And so I think I would love to learn how to do a Scottish accent because I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how to do it.
I can't either. I can't help you there.
It's a really hard one. All I can do is it's a bro brick mulech next to me. And that's my version.
Well,
of it. It doesn't even sound Scottish.
Well, I'll have to introduce you to my Scottish comedian friend, Janie Godley. You may have heard of her, but she's if I watch her, some of her videos are performing in Scotland at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I have no idea what she's saying. But she came to America once, to Georgia, and did a show, but she made it where we could understand. But I said, so we knew what she was saying. We all laughed. But yeah, you'll have to hear Janie. She's great. I am so excited that you shared so much time with me tonight, and you booked us and came a week earlier than you expected. And
yeah,
to hang out with me and Andrea. Andrea and I were on separate coasts, but she's a great pal of the show. And Andrea, I'm glad you hung out in here with us too.
Thanks.
If you ever, when you come back to the States, you've got to find us. You've got to come to Atlanta.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much for having me. I've had an absolute ball talking to you. It's just been great and lovely to meet you too, Andrea. So thank you.
Thank you.
Had a great time.
Nice to meet you too.
Well, thank you so much. So please, please promise you'll come back. Anthony's asked for a round two, so don't let him get ahead of you on this, okay?
For sure, definitely. Maybe we should do a duo.
And we a what?
We'll do
a duo. Oh my God!
Yeah,
a duo. Andrea, you heard the show with Anthony, didn't you? Oh yeah.
I don't know. Did I? Anyway, I'll look it up. Yeah, probably.
He sounds a lot like her. So yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
okay. That's the tip off. Okay.
And I'll book you in a club in Atlanta and Asheville and wherever you want. Thank you, Julie Sharp. This is Madam Perry.
Thank you.
I love you and everybody. Well, you.